You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Like that dude just said a moment ago, we are indeed solid, conservative, and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. But I'll tell you who's saving the world one lawsuit at a time. That's my buddy Matt Clark, who's going to join us now. Matt Clark is the president of the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. He's been on the show multiple times. He's a graduate of Liberty University Law School. He also clerked as a staff attorney at the Alabama Supreme Court. He also worked for the Foundation for Moral Law. Now he heads up the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Glad to have him on again. Matt Clark, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I am well, sir. I'm well. Well, listen, man, I kind of primed the pump a while ago by telling the audience that you just stepped out there and sued the governor and the state health officer, just basically threw down the gauntlet. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a suit I've been wanting to launch since ACLL launched back in 2021, and now we finally have the opportunity to do it. So basically what's going on here is we are representing a small business owner who had a wine tasting shop up in Huntsville. Her business constantly got great reviews, regardless of whether you go through, you know, Google, Yelp, or whatever the thing was available publicly to give feedback on a business. I mean, she was constantly earning, you know, at least 4.8 stars out of 5 all the time. So, you know, the community really enjoyed this place. And with the way her business model was set up, it was designed to get about 70% of the gross profits from the wine tasting experience inside the shop. So when COVID came along in 2020, it took the state health officer, Scott Harris, about a week before he decided with the stroke of a pen that restaurants could, and the like, which would include wine tasting bars, couldn't have dine-in experiences anymore because it was too dangerous. And shortly after that, the infamous stay-at-home order came out where if your business was not one of some enumerated exceptions, you were considered non-essential and you had to stay home.
So
our client's business unfortunately fell under that. And then even when the stay-at-home order lifted, because, you know, Alabama's stay-at-home order lasted for about a month, went away. Fortunately, it went away faster than some places like California or New York did. But the state still imposed a lot of restrictions on dining in inside restaurants. And for poor Sarah Ann, that's how she made most of her money. It wasn't until June of 2021 that Dr. Harris and Governor Ivey finally said, okay, you know what, we're going to do away with dine-in, you know, restrictions inside restaurants as long as you can have, like, a partition between separate booths or tables that can separate people from different parties. And we're looking at this thinking, gosh, if you would have just left this to the free market, because for them, the matter is, I got to find a way to make this work or I don't eat. They probably could have figured that out within a week. It took the government about 9 months to figure out that, hey, there's a way they can stay open just as long as they keep, you know, dividers between people.
Well, so Matt, let me ask you this. The folks who listen to the show are in the Huntsville market, and she's not an anonymous client. What's the name of the business that's now out of business, correct?
Yeah, that's right. The name of the business was Uncorked Providence. It was in the Providence neighborhood area.
Yeah, okay. That's right. And she is now, I mean, she went out of business, basically lost her livelihood with these orders of being declared non-essential, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So, she was narrowly able to avoid bankruptcy. At the last minute, there was a restaurant chain that has several fronts open in Huntsville that came along and decided, number one, to buy her business property, like the wine racks and stuff like that. And she was also able to assign her lease to them. So that's how she was barely able to escape bankruptcy. So she feels fortunate about that. But she also knows she has a lot of friends that ran small businesses like hers that weren't so fortunate.
Yeah.
So she's sticking up not only for herself, but for them too.
So you filed suit, and your suits are naming Governor Ivey and Scott Harris. Where has the suit been filed, and have you heard anything from their attorneys yet?
So it has been filed in the circuit court for Montgomery County. A lot of the times when you sue the government, you have to sue in the place where the government is located or where the orders were sent out. So that's why we have to sue in Montgomery. So far, no, we haven't heard from their attorneys, but, you know, they've got to walk through the process of, you know, getting served, filing any motions or answers, you know, and they've told the press that they're not going to comment on pending litigation. So it'll be a little while before we hear from them.
Okay. Well, this is definitely a shot across the bow, man. This is the kind of thing that, ACLL, the Center for Law and Liberty, was designed for. And, so you're out there getting it done, and have you heard from any other small businesses that said, we want to get on board with this, or we wish you'd called us too because we're in the same boat? Have you heard from anybody else?
Yeah, we're starting to hear from them. We're getting some referrals from friends who know me at ACLL. You know, they're starting to talk in their church or, you know, in places where they hang out. And you know, if they know people who know me, my friends are putting the two of us in touch. So we're hoping that we'll have a lot of small business owners contact us, and you know, we can amend our complaint and get them in on the lawsuit too.
Well, that's cool. Now, you know, for our listener, by the way, this segment I'm doing of the show right now, I'm calling this whole thing the Right Side Law Review, just so you know. But that being said, so you've got typical motion practice comes up first. Dispositive motions are going to be filed. How do you feel about the case? I mean, you wouldn't have filed it if you, I mean, it's not frivolous by any stretch, but how do you feel about it? You think you can survive dispositive motions?
Yeah, I think so. So what the state is probably going to do is they're going to try to get our case thrown out initially at the motion to dismiss phase for two reasons. Number one, they're, you know, if I were a betting man, I would bet that they're going to argue, you don't have standing because, nobody tried to enforce this order on you. If you complied with it, that's your fault. But the cops never called you up and said, we're going to arrest you if you don't comply with the order. And Phil, you may know that last year there was a suit to challenge the mask mandates that the Alabama Supreme Court wound up throwing out. And that was the reason, you know, and to me, that was absolutely absurd because you have the governor here issuing an order saying things like, okay, you are going to be subject to criminal penalties if you violate this. And then law-abiding citizens say, you know, I don't want to try to break the law and be arrested before I challenge this, so I'm going to go ahead and challenge it. And the courts, you know, wound up throwing it out because they said, well, you never had a cop threaten to arrest you, so you don't have standing.
Well, you had a governor threaten to have you arrested, basically. I mean, that's what that amounts to. That's still the heavy hand of government threatening to take action against you, regardless of whether the police showed up at your door. I would think that should count.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So, you know, with respect to the Alabama Supreme Court, you know, I respectfully submit, I think they missed the mark on that. But I think this is going to present an opportunity to make this right because, you know, I think the Alabama Supreme Court and a lot of other courts across the country within that first year of COVID, I think they were all very afraid that if they took action to check the government, that people were going to die. And so I think they were very cautious in trying to step in and do something. But now that, you know, we've moved really from a pandemic into an endemic where, you know, it's kind of with us, but most people have figured out a way to deal with it and people aren't dying all the time. I think the courts are going to have another chance to take a look at this and say, okay, we don't have to freak out. We're probably not going to kill people if we get this wrong. So let's take an honest look at what happened and try to make it right.
Well, and Matt, and just about a minute here on this one, which I applaud your work and I look forward to hearing how it goes. And am I correct? I saw a draft of the suit early on. Did the final portion of the suit include not just the actions of being declared non-essential and that kind of thing, but also include the fact that this might be considered a regulatory taking by the state, which would have to be compensable in some way?
Yeah, that's it. And that was actually essential to making this work because it's a lot easier to stop the government from doing something that is wrong than it is to hold them accountable for what they did in the past. But just in very brief, one of the few ways that you can hold them accountable for what they did is if they deprived somebody of property without just compensation. And here, that's what we're arguing. She lost her lease and she lost a ton of rights of usage to her property because of what the government did, and they didn't pay her for it.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Matt, in about a minute here, is there anything that we need to know about other suits you've got right now? Because you've had these vaccine mandate suits for United Launch Alliance and with FabArc. Is there anything new about those, or are they status quo right now because of the rulings of higher courts right now?
Well, fortunately, we won the FABARC suit. After the Supreme Court stepped in and put the vaccine mandate on hold, OSHA surrendered immediately, and the Sixth Circuit formally dismissed the case after OSHA surrendered. So, praise God, liberty-loving Americans are safe from OSHA's overreach. With ULA, we are still in the process where EEOC is investigating them. But I'll tell you, Phil, EEOC has their lead investigator for systemic discrimination on this case. They're taking more to take these claims seriously than I have ever seen the EEOC take something. So I'm feeling optimistic about this.
Okay. Hey, that's cool stuff, man. Well, listen, if you can hang on during the break, Matt, I know from texting back and forth with you, you've got some thoughts and some research you've already done on Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is being considered right now, this very minute, for confirmation to the Supreme Court of the United States. Can you give us some insights after the break?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
All right. Hang on then. All right, Copper, take us to a break. Folks, we'll come right back from this. We're still in the Right Side Law Review. We're with our friend Matt Clark from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. He's just giving us the lowdown on filing suit for pandemic overreach, basically, in regards to private citizens having their businesses lost by the governor and State Health Officer Scott Harris making these overreaching orders. He's also going to fill us in a minute about Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is looking at possible confirmation to the Supreme Court. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. You stay tuned. We'll be right back. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, this is Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, yep, just plain right. Going right back to the phones right now with my friend Matt Clark. He's the executive director of the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Just filed suit against the governor and the state health officer regarding pandemic overreach that actually shut down businesses, and some businesses never came back. But that being said, all those things aside, a part of our Right Side Law Review for the day, I told you earlier about the Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is currently going through confirmation hearings and being grilled at the moment, according to what I see on the big screen here in the studio by Senator Ben Sasse. She may get confirmed. But Matt, you did some study on her of late. Tell us what you know about her level of jurisprudence, her qualifications, and her biases.
Sure. All right. So in short, I do think Ketanji Brown Jackson is a liberal, or at least means liberal. Senator Ted Cruz, when he heard that Biden had announced Jackson, he was giving an interview to Michael Knowles, and he said, you know, Ketanji has been very careful to not leave a paper trail on big controversial issues, and she, unlike many of the Biden appointees, has not made a lot of these ultra-left, way-out-there, you know, wacky statements that, you know, might land you a job at, say, the Southern Poverty Law Center, but wouldn't get you a job at anywhere else. So for most of her career, Judge Jackson has really enjoyed the reputation of being a lawyer's lawyer. She has teaching affiliations at Harvard, at George Washington University. She is a counselor for the American Law Institute, which you and I know puts out a lot of restatements on, you know, where American law stands. So, you know, they've, at least on paper, you know, have a reputation for being solid, thorough, reliable. So Judge Jackson runs in a lot of those circles. And I think Senator Cruz is right that for most of her career as a judge, she has not, she has certainly not been a liberal bomb thrower. She, according to the New York Times, actually, has a reputation for being thoughtful, detail-oriented, sometimes to a fault. So that's been Ketanji Brown Jackson's reputation from the time that she started off as a trial judge all the way up until now. So I'll say that about her starting off. She has not come across as like the wild bomb throwers like Ruth Bader Ginsburg used to, with, you know, patently making the case for abortion, or Sonia Sotomayor, who would say things like a wise Latina judge can make a better decision than a white male judge could. However, there are parts of her record that are troubling. For instance, when she clerked for Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court when she was out of law school, when she got out, one of the very first things that she did where she volunteered her time that in a high profile case was in an abortion case in Massachusetts. She was working for a big firm in Boston, and she, along with one of the partners and one of the senior associates, did an amicus brief on behalf of NARAL, which is one of the biggest pro-abortion groups in the country, representing them and trying to move the needle a little bit in favor of abortion clinics. So when she got pressed on that point in the past about saying, all right, well, are you pro-abortion? When the Republican senators were pressing her at her D.C. Circuit confirmation hearing, she kind of tried to hide behind the senior partner. She was saying things like, well, I was new at the firm, and, you know, the senior partner was in on it. My supervisor was in on it, so she was, like, trying to hide behind them. But the fact is, she did it pro bono, and before she got called on it, she tried to frame it as you know, being in on, boasting about being in on an important constitutional case. So as far as abortion goes, it looks like the evidence we have is that she is leaning in favor of abortion. I'll also say, when it comes to religious liberty, her responses have been troubling. I was reviewing her testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee when she got confirmed to the D.C. Court of Appeals.
And Matt, we got less than a minute here, all right?
Okay, bottom line, okay, thanks. Yeah, bottom line, she was kind of begrudgingly admitting that religious liberty was starting to win in the courts more. So that was kind of troubling. I think she gets confirmed, she will not be ruling in favor of religious liberty very much.
Well, the last point that I was going to ask you, just your quick thoughts on this, Matt. I mean, I find it troubling that that she was basically picked as first qualification had to be that she was a black female. Second qualification had to be her level of, you know, jurisprudence or knowledge of the law. And do you what's going to happen if an affirmative action or a discrimination in hiring case ever comes to SCOTUS and she's there? Is she going to have to recuse?
That's a good question. You know, she's publicly stated she would not be in favor of such action, but if she gets there by the Supreme Court, I think a lot of people would question her impartiality, so I think she should recuse.
I would think so. Hey, Matt, great segment, man. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you being a part of the Right Side Law Review for the day, and thanks for the work you're doing at the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty.
My pleasure. Thank you, Phil.
All right, folks, that was Matt, Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Just filed a suit against Governor Kay Ivey and State Health Officer Scott Harris for the fact that they shut down businesses unnecessarily and then left them lingering for months and months and months with no opportunity to regain their living, their lifestyle, their ability to work and operate. And some of them never came back from it. We'll see how that goes. We'll keep you posted. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back.